I want to welcome folks who are just logging on. What I've said to the friendly faces we've seen so far is that this is it's our fifth Spark Insight session. So my name is Erin Walsh. And Dad, you've been a little more quiet over there. You want to introduce yourself?
Right. I'm Dr. Dave Walsh. I am Erin's dad. If you haven't visited with me in any of these webinars before, my background is psychology, parent, and grandparent. So nice to be with you, and thanks for joining us.
Great. And then here's kind of the lay of the land during these Spark Insight sessions is that there really is that we could spend the next 8 hours talking about mental health and children, especially given the high levels of stress and uncertainty. These sessions are really designed to fit into what we know you're doing right now, which is that you're juggling. You're juggling many things. So we just want to give one more tool to your toolkit, remind you of some things to be on the lookout for. And then we'll just stay in touch and continue to provide the kind of support that you need. So take care of yourselves. You can keep cameras on or off as you see fit. And we're going to dive in. We do have some slides to share to keep us focused. Otherwise, who knows how long my dad and I could be talking. Alrighty, and we will use the chat box. And so please keep using that, ask questions. If we can't get to your questions today, we'll be in touch and we'll maybe make more Spark Insight sessions around some of your questions. But you are in the right place if you are here for coping with COVID, parenting with mental health in mind. So if you've stumbled into the wrong Zoom room, somehow found the password, welcome. We hope that you still find this session meaningful. And for those of you, as we see a lot of familiar faces, great to see you. For those of you who are new to us, we co-founded Spark and Stitch Institute as sort of the latest Walsh family project. So we care a lot about translating brain science into more understandable language and practical strategies so that we can raise connected and courageous kids. And certainly right now, as we live through the sort of multiple crises that we are living through, this is certainly a time where parenting for courage and connection, or teaching for courage and connection, is more important than ever before in some ways. So if this is your first Spark Insight session, please check out, we'll send the link out to y'all, but the Spark Insight archives will help kind of continue to build that toolkit around different things that we can keep in mind as we parent, teach, work, and live through unprecedented, at least in the last year, levels of stress as this keeps going. So Dad, you wanna take over for a little bit and then we'll keep rolling?
Absolutely. I think there's been a lot of talk and a lot of respect for the essential workers as we all kind of try to navigate this unprecedented pandemic. Well, I think certainly parents and caregivers are on the front lines and are clearly essential workers with trying to hold down three full-time jobs with school starting again, teacher, parent, and trying to keep everything else going, the household going and work going. It's really an overwhelming task. Might be helpful. Let's start to use that chat feature right away. If you have a second, just to the chat feature at the bottom of the screen, type in the ages of your kids. Because that would help us as we give examples for the next 28 minutes that we have an idea of the ages of kids. So we've got some. Okay, great. Thank you.
Katie, you have a little one, toddler.
It is clear that we are dealing with the entire range. I see everything from months to young adults. And so that's very helpful for us to know.
Yeah. And, as we ground ourselves sort of in this moment, in this time, of course, we don't need to spend a lot of time together sort of laying out the kinds of crises that we're facing. But given that there is a fair amount of what we consider sort of ambiguous loss, where it feels sort of almost invisible, the strains, some of the loss of routine, lack of connection, we can start to feel like, well, why aren't we feeling better? Why aren't our kids finding a quote unquote new normal? And so it's just a reminder that the layers of crisis, some of which are not new at all, but have been with us for as long as we have, at least, you know, sort of been trying to figure out how to live together in this country. So the sort of ongoing historic and current crisis of racism layered on top of the next pandemic of COVID, and then the sort of rippling effects of economic uncertainty and economic crisis. So that's not news to anyone, but it's a helpful reminder as we think about in our own family system, thinking about our own identities and our own strengths and some of our own challenges, right? Each of these different layers of crisis are going to be impacting us and our kids in different ways, in unique ways, and in collective ways. And as they intersect, it's no surprise that we are responding with pretty strong stress response. It's part of how our brain is designed. It's part of how we are wired to be scanning the environment for potential threat. So in the wake of the shooting of Jacob Blake, for example, yesterday, whether or not you live in Wisconsin or not, this is another example of sort of activating our stress response system, for some in much more acute ways than others. And this is how our brain is designed, right? To scan our environment for threat. When we detect or perceive threat, right, we sound an alarm, and then without even thinking about it, right, our brain and body orchestrate a complex set of stress response systems and chemicals that will help us greet stress and adapt, cope, or respond in order to keep us alive. So if you didn't see the Spark Insight session, it was called The Many Faces of Stress. We took kind of a bit of a deeper dive into some of the neurobiology of stress and what that could look like. But we'll revisit it sort of shortly here as we set the stage for what does it look like as we move from, at least in terms of COVID, from a sprint to sort of a marathon of stress. And so depending upon your family, this might be a marathon that you've been running for a very, very long time. For some of us, there's new and emerging things like school not being in session this fall, or somebody in your family getting sick. And so as we think about our stress response, we're very good, and kids are pretty good at encountering stress, activating our stress response system, right? Responding to it and then coming back to calm. Even during big crisis, right? We have what's called surge capacity. So it's as if our body just escalates our ability to handle hard things, right? We get adrenaline. Sometimes we feel more focused. You might have felt that maybe in the first weeks of stay-at-home orders where you felt like, oh, you know, I'm really good in a crisis. That's not true for everybody, but some of you might have felt that right away. Well, now 6 months later, for most people, even if their bodies sort of rose to that moment, surge capacity has been largely depleted. We have moved now into more chronic levels of stress. And as we move into chronic levels of stress, we can start to see some of the faces of stress emerge in even more significant ways. So we're not going to take a deep dive because we already did a Spark Insight on this, but Dad, you just want to remind us again of, especially as we think about our kids, what that stress response can look like and feel like.
Yeah, let's remember that to pick up on what Aaron said, the way our brain is designed, the way our brain is built, is that when we're faced with a lot of stress, which our brain interprets as danger, we actually move away from the thinking part of the brain and into the more part, the more reactive feeling and functioning, and so you know that one of the challenges then is that as we undergo stress, it is hard to think clearly and it's hard to problem solve. It's the way our brain is it's the way our brain is built. And as Aaron said, there are many faces of stress, you know, and particularly when we talk about our kids, you know, a lot of time kids are not able to say, you know, I'm feeling stressed. So it's a lot of times it comes out sideways. And, you know, stress shows up in lots of different ways. Humor, sometimes humor and disengagement, not taking it seriously, exhaustion. Changes in behavior. So a lot of times, you know, it shows up different it shows up in sideways. And if you've been in our session on stress, you might remember the image of the porcupine. That a lot of times, things get a little bit, particularly with our kids, not just with our kids, but with one another as well. When we're under a lot of stress, our capacity for patience gets worn a little bit thin. And so we need to kind of remember that. Now, those are kind of the normal responses to stress that we're all experiencing. And what we're going to talk about during this particular session is that when it goes beyond that, when it starts to raise some questions about mental health, and what we want to avoid is we want to avoid two extremes. We want to avoid the extreme of kind of overreacting and underreacting. Aaron, if you could advance two slides there.
Oh, sorry about that.
We want to be in tune with our kids, but we don't want to overreact. We're all worried, and when we're worried, we can sometimes exaggerate or amplify the things that we're seeing. On the other hand, we don't want to ignore signs. We don't want to ignore cues or symptoms that things may be a little bit more serious than we're thinking. And so we want to avoid those two extremes.
And I'm just curious, if we go back to that slide on the sort of faces of stress, this is not something where we just have one go-to response. Sometimes we tend towards, if I'm stressed, maybe anger or irritability, but we can swing between these. So your kid might one day be furious and the next day say, wake me up when I graduate. I want to sleep through the whole thing. So sort of these swings are really, really common and sometimes as we come in and out of a sort of panic or stress response. So one day feeling like I can do this, I feel capable, I'm ready for online school, and the next day your child is, wants to throw their Chromebook against the wall. So I'm curious, as you think about sort of yourself or your kids, if you could just use the chat and let us know if any of these faces of stress kind of resonate with what either you're feeling or what you're observing in your kids. And just let us know kind of what are you seeing in your homes? What are you sensing in yourself as you move from the sprint to kind of the marathon of living with chronic stress? And we'll wait and see some of those come in. Yeah, so this is interesting, right? Some kids seem totally fine, which makes me wonder, is he really? We'll talk a little bit about that. We're not gonna take a deep dive into distance learning, but some kids are actually doing better than they were at school. If learning online fits better, if some of the ways that they are being able to connect with family fits better. So that's where listening to our kids and observing and listening to their words when they say, I'm fine. And then also looking at their behavior. Are they acting in ways that sort of also reflect that sentiment? So yeah, so what we're seeing, other things coming, wanting to hole up in the house, change in sense of time, sleeping during the day, apathy, lethargy, exhaustion. Yeah, I see each of these in my whole family, sort of a sense of hopelessness, right? This sense of sort of fuzziness. And we're going to be talking about motivation in next week's Spark Insights. So we'll be able to talk about some of this feeling of just like, what's the point? We'll talk about some strategies where can we try to stay motivated, become less patient? Absolutely, Hillary. We have to have cognitive room for patience. And that becomes more tricky as that part of our brain starts shutting down. So that pain and fatigue in the body. So let's just, one of the reasons it's nice to hear from folks, hopefully that didn't backfire and just make us more overwhelmed to realize that nobody's doing okay. But remember that it's a bit of a shared experience. One of the problems, especially related to COVID, where there's this sort of ambiguous sense of loss, is that I talk with parents who say, I just don't understand why we're not doing better. Like, now we should have adapted to this. And this idea of feeling like, why can't I feel better than I am? Why am I still fuzzy? Why am I still irritable? And just a reminder that as we look across the folks, even just on this webinar, that none of us are alone if we're still feeling a significant amount of prickliness. Because as we think about how do we support our kids, it's a reminder that worry-free, of course, doesn't even feel possible in this moment, but it's also not the goal, right? So our goal is not to convince our kids or try to get a toolkit that helps our kids be sort of worry-free and carefree in this moment. If they are doing okay, that's great. but it makes sense given the context of some of the concerns. So much uncertainty is likely to make us quite anxious. So not knowing how to stay safe, not knowing what happens next, not knowing about economy, not knowing how to influence systems change, not knowing, not knowing, not knowing. And so the question is, how do we live with this level of uncertainty? And then, like my dad said, why do we want to make sure that we're thinking about what are some of those red flags? How do we make sure that we don't over-respond or under-respond? What we know that we can do as parents, and the research is useful here to remind us that we actually do have some tools in our toolkit that are hugely protective for children and adolescents' mental health. Our ability to stay connected, and so those of you who are saying I'm more irritable, this does not mean that we are superhuman and we figure out a way to just stay calm and loving at all times, right? That's not really realistic given what's going on inside our brains and our bodies. But staying connected means learning how to apologize, learning how to repair, coming back together, trying to find some family rituals and family connections. So those of you especially who have, I see a lot of you with adolescents, they may not be thanking you for a connection right now. It's developmentally appropriate for them to be out in the world. The pandemic is particularly difficult for adolescents. But just because they're not thanking you for it doesn't mean it's not still protective for their mental health. So that combination of how do we stay connected with each other and providing some kind of structure. And even when that falls apart on any given day, this may seem a little fluffy, but it's very clear that if we can approach the challenges we're facing, that our kids are facing and that our families are facing, with the messaging of, I care about you, we care about each other, and we will figure this out together, that does not make the stress go away, but it makes a huge difference in terms of protecting our kids' brains from the worst outcomes of chronic stress. And so we don't have to have all the answers. We don't have to have all the answers if we're worried that our kids are living with depression or living with anxiety. But our ability to say, hey, we're gonna figure this out together is a really, really big, really big deal. So when conflicts are coming up, it's important for us to sort of communicate that to them. Because these protective factors of we're in it together, we're a team, we care about each other, and we're gonna try our best to find some kind of routine and structure are even more important as the crises sort of persist. Because we know that there is increased risk factor for anxiety and depression, disordered eating, substance abuse, suicide, screen time, overuse, pathological use. So if we know that that's a risk factor, let's ground ourselves in how are the kids doing? We're still getting data in, especially on young children. A brand new study from the CDC last week shows us that there is real cause for care, attention, and to make sure that we are tracking the mental health of our kids. So young adults, so this the CDC survey was on adults. So we didn't get the data on the little kids, but young adults 18 to 24, which I see a lot of you in that sort of parenting in that range, over 60% of young adults are reporting symptoms of anxiety or depression. 1 in 4 young adults reports having seriously considered suicide in the last 30 days. A 4-H survey that came out recently, right, reveals 7 out of 10 teens say they're struggling with mental health. A vast majority say that they think mental health is a top concern for them and their peers. So this is important because as we talk about the faces of stress, what we're trying to do is normalize it. It's okay to feel fuzzy. It's okay to be irritable. But in normalizing our typical response to stress, we don't want to miss or ignore signs that something more serious might be going on.
And so,
Dad, you want to talk a little bit about that? Yeah.
As we want to pay attention so that we don't miss, so that we don't pay attention, there's kind of three things that we should think about. One is symptoms or cues that persist over time. And so for somebody to not, you know, for a teenager, for example, not to want to get out of bed on Monday is maybe a cause for concern, but it's not really the same as when that goes on for day after day, or we start to count weeks and not days. So what we want to pay attention to are changes or patterns. We'll get to the patterns and clusters in just a second, that persist over time. So any of us can have a bad day. Any of us can exhibit behaviors or symptoms that might be alarming, but it might be a passing thing. When things start to persist over time, that's when we need to pay more attention. The second thing that we need to pay more attention to are clusters or patterns. When I say clusters, when symptoms start to accumulate, when there start to be clusters that persist over time, back to that first item, persist over time, then we need to once again pay closer attention that things may be, although we're all under stress, as we've been saying, and our kids are under stress, it might be starting to get into the danger zone when we start to see groups of symptoms, groups of behaviors that are persisting over time and not really relenting. And then the third is the history. You know, some kids come into this, some people, come into the this unprecedented crisis, this pandemic that we're all trying to find our way through, but they already come in with some challenges. So a history of problems. So kids who have a tendency to be anxious, kids who have a tendency toward depression, kids who come in with, different mental health challenges, then this extra stress, we need to pay attention. So these are kind of the three things to think about. We don't want to underreact, but we don't want to overreact either. So we want to pay attention to clusters of symptoms or behaviors that persist over time, and particularly pay attention if some of our kids already are predisposed with some risk factors. So what are some of these symptoms that we're talking about? Well, one of the things that we need to be aware of is that particularly with young children, they aren't necessarily able to articulate, I'm feeling really sad, I'm feeling really bad, I'm really worried. A lot of times, what will happen is that it will show up in terms of physical or behavioral cues. So the young child who starts to complain about stomach aches or headaches, those could be their physical or behavioral cues that there's something going on in terms of worry, stress, depression, anxiety. Changes in appetite, changes in sleep, either too much or trouble sleeping. And so when you start to see changes in those two areas, that's again, something to pay attention to. Unexplained physical changes, physical complaints. And so there are stomach aches, there are aches and pains, but as far as you can tell, there's no underlying physical explanation for that. Well, that could be what are some of the psychosomatic, which is what that's called, the psychosomatic manifestations of underlying distress. Low energy, or the opposite, kind of almost hyper energy. Changes in social motivation and activities. And so things that, your child may have previously enjoyed, and then over time they lose interest in that. I don't really want to do that. I don't really want to get together with people, even on Zoom. And then feeling down or hopeless for long stretches of time. I think all of us can probably identify times over the last 6 months when we have felt very down, very sometimes really hopeless. More and more people, now that at least in Minnesota there are signs of autumn starting to appear, some of the trees are starting to change color. And I've had so many people start to worry about winter, what happens when we can't go outside. And all of those things make sense, but when that starts to become kind of over time and feeling down and hopeless for long stretches. Recurring thoughts of death or suicide. One of the statistics that came out in the study that Aaron just cited was the number of young people who have actually thought about suicide in the previous, in the previous month. Very worrisome thing. So these are some of the symptoms or cues that we want to be on the lookout for, and particularly if they persist over time, and particularly if your child is coming into this whole experience with some pre-existing challenges that they're already dealing with.
This is a useful list for us to come back to, because I think sometimes as parents, we do tend to rely on words a lot, both with teenagers and with little kids. So we have a conversation, how are you doing? And they say, I'm fine, or I don't want to talk about it. But so much of how mental health can manifest is in sort of other things, other behavioral, physical cues. So, a little five-year-old is probably not going to say, well, I'm really, really feeling anxious about all the uncertainty. They're much more likely to, throw things against the wall and stomp off, or not be able to sleep and crawling into your bed every night. So we want to sort of provide that connection and structure as a protective factor, and then keep our eyes peeled. The other thing that we can do is normalize. A lot of you are parenting teenagers, so just normalizing this idea that it's okay to not be okay right now. We're trying to do both and messaging to our kids. One of the messages we do want to give is we think that you have skills. We think you can handle worry. We're going to build a worry toolkit together. And when that toolkit starts to feel like it's not working, we need to be able to talk about it. So that both and messaging and both and thinking that we're conveying our confidence in our kids, that we know that they have tools, that they're practicing those tools, and we have to be able to talk about taking care of our mental health. And talking through what that can look like for you. So select what we call selective vulnerability, right? Our kids are not our therapists. It's not our job to sit down and talk about our own hopelessness for an hour. But it is okay to normalize not being okay. And here, normalizing therapy, normalizing that sort of extra support. It's also, as you know, this is a short session, but as we think about those symptoms, and signs, it's just a reminder that it can be, parents often think, well, if I ask about suicide, or if I ask about depression and anxiety, it might sort of create mental health challenges. Parents especially think this around suicide, right? If I mention it, it'll give them the idea. It's really clear from the research that talking about mental health actually with our kids gives us windows into their experiences and helps prevent and protect. And so avoiding the conversations is actually something that we want to make sure we're not doing, that if we are concerned, that we are willing to start those conversations. And so talking about them, normalizing mental health, these are huge protective factors for our kids. This is a time, a lot of you are parenting teens. This is a time to make sure that we are creating safe homes. This is in terms of not putting our head in the sand. This is a time that if you have firearms in your home, we have to make sure they're locked and not loaded, right? This is a time that if we have that old bag of medications up in the closet, this is a time to make sure that we're disposing those in a safe way. This is hard to talk about. And can might actually right now you might feel your stress response system ignite as you think about the ways that we want to look around our house and make sure that there isn't just a ton of liquor in the liquor cabinet that's open and not monitored. These kinds of safety precautions become really important as we think about preventative measures. This is always a good idea, especially parents of teenagers. But as we look at rising levels of mental health concerns, this is the time to look around your house and make sure that there aren't means for our kids to be hurting themselves if they get into a hopeless place.
And if we talked about the symptoms over time, clusters of symptoms, and particularly with the history. So what if my child is struggling? Well, what are things that we can do? First of all, we can listen, empathize, sharing that concern, sharing that pain goes a long way. We talked earlier about how important connection is. We don't want to amplify. But we also don't want to minimize. We want to have a balanced approach. And then we also want to give options. And it's perfectly fine to seek help. If we start to get worried that this is, something that could be in the category of serious, then this is not the time to isolate. This is the time to connect. And so staying in touch, and then also reaching out, there's a lot of support out there. We can't always do it face to face, but there is telecounseling, there is telehealth. The schools, now that schools are coming back in session in one way or another, whether it's face to face or whether it's virtual, there's going to be, I think a lot of school districts are going to make sure, because they know that this is such a stressful time, they are going to provide mental health support. And we need to make sure that we learn about that and don't hesitate to take advantage of it.
So we said that this was a short session. Obviously, we made reference at the beginning that we could probably spend 8 hours talking about mental health and children. But I think what we wanted to do was to come together to talk a little bit about striking that balance, right? How do we normalize feelings of stress? How do we talk about that with our kids? Talking about the sources of stress. Bringing them to visibility, whether that's talking about racism, talking about the uncertainty, that becomes an important part of our job, right? Of providing that warmth and that care. And making sure that we're talking with our friends and with each other and with trusted other systems of support about that tender balance between not over-responding. So our kid says, I want to sleep today, and we immediately assume that they're in crisis mode, right? So how do we kind of stay in that place where we're also not ignoring what are the real mental health consequences of the realization that this is not just a 3-month experience, that this is persisting over time. But if you did feel, maybe you paid attention to your body in this short session and you felt your own stress response ignite at different times as you're thinking about your kids, the research is really clear that parents who parent with mental health in mind, where they are talking about feelings, normalizing mental health, and where they're approaching both sources of stress and mental health challenges with this idea of we will figure this out together. I don't have all the answers yet. We don't quite understand everything you need, but we're going to figure it out. And so that may feel like a small thing, given the sort of the huge systems that are causing stress right now, but it's not a small thing for your child or your teenager and their mental health. So I hope that this has been a useful short review of just some of the things to keep on the top of our mind. We wanted to make this short so that you all who are juggling can get back to work, can get back to kids, can get back to all the things that you're doing. We'll be here next week talking about the science of motivation. And so a lot of you did write in that, the sort of apathy or not wanting to do the things I used to want to do. So we'll be talking about that next week. But we hope that this has been useful. We'll follow up with the recording And we'll close for now. We'll stick around for a couple minutes. If anybody has questions, we might not have time to take them now live, but we'd love to hear them because that'll give us ideas for upcoming sessions. But the most important message that we can give at the end is that you play an incredibly powerful role in helping our kids navigate this stressful time. And they rarely turn to us and thank us for it. But the work that you're doing to stay connected and give that structure and say, we're going to figure this out together, it makes all the difference in the world. So thanks.